Hello and welcome to episode 48 of Good Copy, Bad Copy. I'm Emily King, Radix's content marketing manager, and I'm joined by Fiona Campbell-House, founder and lead copywriter at Radix Communications.
Hello.
And I'm also joined by Radix's creative director, David Maguire.
Good day.
In this episode, we are discussing what's new in B2B blogging and how to write good B2B blogs. Blogs are the second most used content marketing tactic by B2B marketers, according to research from the Content Marketing Institute. But it's clear that brand blogs we read today are different from the ones that we were putting out 5 years ago. If you have any questions or comments about this episode, please feel free to email us at podcast@radix-communications.com or tweet us at radix.com. Okay, so blogs, been around a bit. More than a bit.
Since before the internet, almost. Like, people were just writing them, and then the internet came along and hooked them up. I think the blogs existed first.
Before the internet?
Are we just overhead projectors before that?
And diaries. Personal diaries.
For exclusive audience.
Diaries for exhibitionists.
But I suppose, like, obviously blogging in itself started off with personal blogging and stuff like that, and it was a while before companies adopted it as a content tactic, but a lot's changed, I suppose, in the last 5 years. I would say, yeah, actually a lot has changed, because what I used to get asked to write for clients versus what I see our copywriters being asked to write for clients now are very, very different beasts.
Absolutely.
Well, what are some of the biggest changes you guys have seen?
Well, for me, I think, you know, if we're looking at that kind of time horizon, the biggest change has been the move away from just using blogs as kind of low cost, low quality filler for SEO purposes from the old days of Google before the algorithm updates. And so what's changed for me, I mean, particularly even in the last year or few months, is an appreciation by marketers of the different ways you can use blogs, you know, the absolute versatility of it as a medium. So you can still use it for search to attract traffic to your site, but you can also use it to promote content that you have. So as a kind of an additional way to promote content, you can use it to kind of generate social engagement on platforms like LinkedIn, since it's brought in its Pulse blogging platform, and you can use it to raise profile of experts within your organization, and generally just share your expertise and raise the profile of the expertise of your organization. So there's lots of different ways we see blogs being used now. So there's no kind of consensus really across the industry of, you know, a blog is this and it is for this.
I think that versatility, I think, you know, we're saying in the copy chat, you know, they are the bird's eye potato waffle of content. They are waffly versatile. No, just me. I'm that very narrow age band where there's got to be some
business
going.
I know.
Okay,
yes.
Just leaving me to hang kind of in the shame of the reference.
Generation X, the forgotten generation.
Quite so. Bird's eye potato wolf. They were a thing before there were millennials.
My mum used to cook them for me. It's just that
I used to live on them.
They were a thing.
And Findus crispy pancake. Hugely digress. But they are that thing. And I mean, even before, almost before they were search engine filler, they were kind of just like a news feed, just like a diary. And to an extent, they still kind of can be that. But then they sort of came of age a bit when the sort of the content marketing idea came around. I think they sort of were such a staple of that idea of sharing your expertise, becoming an authority, and demonstrate your knowledge and creating content that's helpful and engaging. I think, you know, that all sort of happened around the same time, although a lot of those kind of points of versatility are now, I think, where it's spread out, they're kind of coalescing in a sense, sort of back together, where people are maybe using search in a different way, so that they go, you know, they can use the search statistics to find topics that people aren't talking about and find that white space, that here is here's a gap. Here's a thing that people want. And it may be really, really niche, but to find out actually what their audience is asking about. And that's something where now, and that's another thing I think with blogs now, they're getting so very, very niche, very, very specific. Sometimes in what they're talking about. And sometimes search can actually inform that, and it can be very useful to go after a very specific search term that you can kind of reveal that there's value there. And I think we've talked before, I mean, blogs certainly are getting longer. I don't think there's any debate about that. I mean, I think it was last year, I think, you know, we talked about the Orbit Media survey that Andy Crestatina put together. So the average blog length's over 1,000 words for the first time. People are taking longer to write them, although some of that's just a factor of there being more words rather than taking longer to research them, arguably. Editing is more common among blogging now. You know, those are all things that they found among bloggers. But the thing that was really interesting there is that all of those things correlate with better results as well. I think that's something also that came out in the copy chat as well. People are doing this stuff because that's where the investment pays off.
Yeah, and I would add to that, I agree with all of that, and it's also meant that people are now willing to pay more for blogs.
Hooray.
So hooray, yeah. But you know, 3 or 4 years ago there were the content mills on the internet, and you could pay, you know, £3.50 to have your 300 word blog written and you would get something, and it was of questionable quality. But now you know, that just doesn't deliver any value anymore. And so marketers are now appreciating that if you want a blog post that actually delivers some value, you know, it generates interest, it sparks sales conversations, you know, it sparks a lot of secondary effects that I think we'll probably talk about in a little while. It's worth paying extra money to have somebody write a very good, very well-researched blog for you.
It's interesting that there's, and I think some of the old approach is still there, but I think it's kind of dying. And sometimes when people talk about blogs are doing great or blogs aren't doing so well, they're maybe talking about one of those two approaches. The one of them is dying out, hopefully, as that there's the whole content shock thing,
yeah,
where there's just all of this rubbish, you know, grey goo content. And it does just take more to stand out. The price of admission got higher. I mean, I think blogs are still a very cost-effective thing to do. You know, because once you've got your audience and it's all plugged in, and you've got your content management system, and you know, you don't need to kind of necessarily go off and do loads of design on them. They're right there, so it's still a, you know, comparatively a cost effective thing to do. But yeah, the people aren't doing them because they're cheap, yeah, anymore.
So David, you managed to get some input from some of our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. I reached out, because people involved in marketing don't just ask anymore. We reach out now. And Paul Hewardine at Earnest, who is by all accounts a long-term listener of the podcast. So very nice to get him on the show at last. Came back with his thoughts on what's happening in B2B blogging at the moment, and I think it's actually quite interesting because it dovetails quite nicely with some of what we've been saying so far.
So what's been the biggest change in B2B blogging in the last 12 months? Well, I think the problem is there has been very little change. The same ideas are being endlessly recycled and rehashed. My worry is actually there's a lack of real originality out there. I think here's what tends to happen. The insights behind all too many blog posts are generated not through first-hand experience or talking to real people, but on the back of a few Google searches. So it means the same sources are being used again and again, but each time slightly bastardized. So we end up with this myriad of blog posts expressing a point of view that's just no different from anyone else's. The bloggers who do so really risk turning into what I'd say is crap covers bands, essentially playing the same tracks as everyone else ad nauseum. Big question, I guess, is how long before buyers switch off?
So I think Paul's got some very good points that he's raising there. Some really, really good points.
Absolutely. Like, standing ovation. For if I wasn't right in front of a microphone and it would disrupt everything, standing ovation from me. He's right. I mean, I think he's talking about one particular kind of blogging and what could happen there. But it is a thing that we do see, isn't it? That people, you know, say they want better quality. They say that, you know, that they want things to be more in depth, but they have to be prepared to put the expertise in. They have to be prepared to help their writer to make that. Otherwise, you do get to this situation where the content is eating itself.
Yeah, I think there is still quite a lot of expectation, as Paul says, that the client who's commissioning the blog doesn't really have to do anything other than, you know, come up with a list of generic titles of, you know, this is the kind of thing that we want to be blogging about, and then kind of sending the writer away to do the research and come up with something that, as Paul says, probably will be the same as what any other B2B brand that's writing on the same topic will come up with, because there is no kind of unique first-hand insight there. You know, you are relying on kind of second-hand insight and what you can find from a Google search. And the difference between those blogs, which are kind of generic blogs that don't have any kind of first-hand insight, and the difference between those and blogs that we, for example, work on, where we've been able to talk to an expert who has unique insight into a very specific market niche or a specific industry or very specific technology area, the difference in quality and just level of interest and, you know, something that somebody would actually want to read is quite incredible.
Yeah, I mean, because I think a great blog really, really can stand out when a client's got to put, has to put the yards in and help their writer. Absolutely. And I think that comes out in some of the comments that that we had on the B2B copy chat this month, which was also about B2B blogging. Isn't that right, Emily?
Yeah, so we have a monthly copy chat for those of you who don't know. And if you're interested, we've got one coming up on May 2nd, and this episode's going out before then. So if you want to have a look at hashtag B2B copy chat and see what's going on, that would be great. But yeah, we had a chat about blogging. We had a series of questions asking everyone about things. And there were definitely some clear changes that people who were joining us for that session had noticed. We had Shelley Lucas, who is a content maestro, joining us, and she pointed out that one of the big changes that she's seen is like hearing less about bloggers and more about influencers, which is a big change, and also kind of feeds in with that everyone's got to kind of have an opinion on everything kind of thing, rather than perhaps offering blogs that kind of gives people something useful that they can work with. And also that, again, sort of like, you know, Shelley acknowledges that there's just this trend towards like, you know, longer blog posts and actually looking at sort of like 1500 plus words as well. So you've kind of got like journalistic level articles being published by brands.
Yeah. And Shelley said, you know, specifically those blogs perform better. And I asked her on the other copy chat, and I was like, do you mean search? Do you mean social engagement? Do you mean end results and driving business? And as far as I could tell, it was across all of those things. And I think that's certainly what we've found on our, both for our clients and the stuff that we've done for ourselves, isn't it? It's often the really big, long, chunky reads that people really get into.
Yeah, I think so. And it's not just the fact that they're long. I mean, we've talked about this before. Mm. It's not the fact they're 1,500 words long makes them so successful. It's the fact that they're 1,500 words, they're in-depth, they're research, they're telling the audience something that's new and unique and they're not going to get elsewhere. And that's why they're successful.
Absolutely.
Writers Limited, who are a copywriting company based between, I think it's the UK and Australia. Mm. And I don't know who joined us specifically from the company for the chat earlier this month, but they pointed out again with the whole that brands are seeing it as a cost-effective tactic / channel. You know, there's a lot of real estate online that you can get out of a single blog post, and that obviously it supports a company's overall marketing strategy. And then we had David Harland, aka Wordman Copy, pointing out that they are definitely now more than just SEO filler. And it's just, he thinks that many big brands finally get them. And that's where we're seeing, that's why we're seeing an investment, basically.
I think that's true. I think a lot depends what you mean by many. I think a lot of brands are, because I think that it's only those blogs that are delivering value now. I think the ones that are filler, they just don't get a return.
No, and I think that's the reason our blog work has massively increased, because I think before people would just go to the cheapest possible option, the cheapest possible outlet to get 300, 400, 500 words. And now there's this realization that blogs can be very high value pieces of content if they're very well, very expertly, very professionally produced. I think that's why we're seeing our blog work increase. Yeah.
So I suppose this all begs the question, are blogs going to remain a staple of B2B content, or are they going to evolve further or disappear at any point soon, or are they going to be around for another 5 years?
Well, I think they can always evolve. There are always new things and where you can kind of integrate with them and make them more more visual and put, slide shares in them and videos and things, and interesting to see how this new string format by Velocity might sort of integrate with a blog and all this. So there's evolutions always possible, but the blog itself, it's so versatile, it's so cost effective. If a company has a web presence and some stuff that it wants to share, blog's a brilliant way to get it out there. If you've got, as Fiona was saying, if you've got some a really big chunky piece of tentpole content, you can atomize it really nicely into some like themes and pull out elements across a series of blogs and get more value from it that way. So I can't see the blog going away. They may take more writing, better writing. They may take more promotion to get them to stand out just from the lake of content that's out there. But I can't see them. I can't see blogs ceasing to be an important thing anytime soon.
No, I totally agree. But I do think that, as always with content marketing, that people are going to have to keep upping their game because, the general quality of blog content increases, the amount of blogs out there will increase. And so you're going to have to work harder and harder to stand out, as is always the case in content marketing. And so you will have to keep getting better at producing blogs. You will have to keep looking for niche areas that nobody else is talking about. You'll have to keep looking for those insights that nobody else has. You will have to keep knowing what questions people want answered, what questions your customers have got, what questions they should be asking. People will just have to keep working hard to find ways to produce blogs that stand out.
Do you think there will be more and more better blogs? Or do you think that just as the stakes get higher and the investment, the research and the quality gets higher, there are going to be fewer people in the game? So you get fewer blog posts by number as the quality increases.
That's interesting. I don't quite know how to answer that. Well, I mean, what I do think is we will see more and more niche blogs because I think as the more generalist blogs fail to kind of cut through now because there are so many people writing on these same generalist topics, I think the way to move forward will be to kind of move into more and more niche areas of expertise. So I think but whether we'll see a kind of drop off in the amount of blog posts overall, I don't know. But I think we will see more and more kind of niche, very focused blogs.
And that might go hand in hand with some kind of variation in the platform and the delivery of these blogs. So the very niche blogs, I don't know, maybe they're more searchable. So it's not such an issue. But certainly I know for our clients, we've seen some of the really, really, niche stuff, the really geeky stuff tends to perform really well on LinkedIn.
Yeah, it does perform really well, and that depends on your definition of performing really well. But what we're talking about is the type of blog that is very focused on a particular issue in a particular industry, and so it might have achieved 360 views on LinkedIn, which somebody might think, that's crap. I can get 10 times that number, but it's 360 views from people within that industry who are very interested in that issue and want to solve it and have the budget and have the authority to do something about that issue. And so those are the only 360 people you need to talk to. So it's that, it's like really focusing in on, you know, what is an issue that matters to a niche audience of people, but who are actually going to act on it and do something about it.
Absolutely.
So I think you gave us a nice, lovely internal training session on blogging in the last past few months, and you had some really good points coming out of that. So do you have any top tips writing good brand blog posts?
Top tips for writing good blog posts. Well, I guess, I mean, this is purely on the copywriting side. So it's like, if you're sitting down to write a blog post, what should you be bearing in mind? And one of them is getting the title of it absolutely right. And I'm not talking about the SEO title, I'm talking about the on-page title, you know, what is going to make somebody read this post. And, you know, it's worth putting a lot of effort and a lot of thought into, you know, who is the audience for this blog? What are they interested in? What words are going to be trigger words for them in this blog post title that will make them, A, notice it on the page, and B, think that sounds really interesting, I'm going to read that. So, and, you know, we found that, you know, the more specific the title, the more concrete words in there that, you know, appeal to what your audience is thinking about, the more successful the blog post is going to be. So, very specific, very appealing title. And on the same note, I mean, you've got to get the opening sentence and the opening paragraph absolutely right, because if you don't, then that's where people are going to switch off. They're not going to read any further. So, you know, a lot of people try to cram too much into the opening sentence, where, you know, this is where you need to really be grabbing people's attention. So, you know, make it short, make it surprising, tell them something they don't know, start with a really interesting anecdote, you know, pull people in, whatever ways you can use to pull people in, use that for the opening paragraph. Then, you know, I mean, there's all sorts of things to bear in mind when you're writing a blog post, but as you're writing the post, you know, keep in mind, what questions is the audience going to be asking at this point? What is it they want to know? And even like pull those questions out into subheaders for your copy, so that their eye can be immediately drawn to these questions on the page. And, you know, these are hopefully the questions they want to ask anyway. And so it just helps to guide them through the blog and make sure they read it all. I'm sure, David, you've got more.
I wrote down a list and you've gone through most of them.
There are notes, I can see notes.
Yeah, so it was almost like Fiona was reading my notes. No, absolutely, the sense of audience, presenting the value early, having the killer opening, both because that's where it catches them, and also because when stuff is shared on social media, you get that first sentence or so in there. And I think that's one of the changes as blogging has become more established and more professional. You know, people that remember the old days of blogging remember blogs that start, "Well, as I sat down to write this blog, I didn't know quite what I was going to write about. And then I was struck by the tale of Moby Dick," and, you know, or whatever, you know, or, "You'll know, for those who have read my previous series of blogs, you will realize this." And it's just like all of that reference that you just only cut all of that out, jump right in at the middle, jump right in at the action. Absolutely. I think lots of, you know, good sort of illustrations and examples and facts and things you didn't know, and just kind of pepper it all the way through. You know, the more you can tell a lot of little stories in it, I think that's great. It's good, I think, if a blog has a sense of personality. My personal preference, and I know it's not for everybody, my personal preference is I love writing and reading blog posts that are by an identifiable person within the organization, rather than just the voice of God. You know, yeah, this is the brand speaking. No, let me talk to a person within the brand. You know, get a sense of who the author is. Even if it's actually a writer pretending to be that author, who's at least listened to them and how they speak. And make it fun. I like blogs that are fun. You know, if it's fun, then at least, you know, not fun, then memorable or interesting or useful, but some kind of, you know, where I'm kind of enjoying it as I'm reading it, you know, keep me kind of engaged and going all the way through. And I think going back to the title, Fiona, you had a very specific tip about keeping the titles very, very concrete and focused. I recall, is it kind of just killing present participles?
Oh yeah, yes, yeah. This is my pet thing for this whole year. It's like we must not use present participles. So this is the classic would be optimizing your supply chain. You know, that as a title of a blog. I mean, that may be what the blog is about, but, you know, looking at that as a title, it's like, well, who's optimizing? Are we optimizing? Are you optimizing? Who's doing it? Is it urgent? You know, is it something we have to do now? You know, what am I going to learn that's new? the whole thing about just using that ing suffix, that present participle, it's just very vague. You know, it doesn't create a sense of, you know, I'm going to learn something concrete and new and valuable that I can use now. It's I don't like it, and I think we should all stop using it as copywriters.
I think that's an absolutely brilliant thing for people to take away. All the listeners to go away. Maybe single-handedly, this podcast will declare war on the present participle.
Yes, yeah.
I do have one tip. And it's something that I appreciate that blog posts do. Even if it's a thought leadership post, I think that towards the end of that post, I mean, yeah, you've got your call to action at the end, trying to get them to do an action that's favourable towards you, but you should also perhaps just offer like a piece of actionable advice that the reader can enact upon and actually do something with that's going to help them, because it's still content marketing at the end of the day, and the best content marketing is useful in some way.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah. Couldn't agree more.
And include that in a podcast, like include advice like kill the present participle.
That's right, yes. If you take one thing away from this podcast, it's just like kill your present participles.
Hunt them
or
down.
Participle. I don't know how to pronounce it.
I don't
know. So the only problem about podcasting is pronouncing things.
Participle. Participle.
That's all we've got time for in this episode of Good Copy, Bad Copy.
Already? It's outrageous.
Our next episode is going to be discussing roots into copywriting and whether having a previous career makes you a better copywriter. I have a feeling we might also be working in some stats and stuff from the PCN's latest survey results in order to talk about this.
It's literally being released at the time of recording.
So it's going to be good. If you have any questions or comments about this episode, or you want to share your own copywriting career experiences, please feel free to email us via podcast@radix-communications.com. You could also tweet us at radix.com, and you can find our website at radix-communications.com, where you can also sign up for our monthly email for the latest copywriting tips and insights.